case of this morning, which is United States against Warren Lindsay.
May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Anderson. My name is Tate Chambers, and I represent the United States of America. Both parties agree that Judge McDade created plain error when he failed to give reasonable notice to either party that he was going to depart downward for the overrepresentation of the criminal history. Both parties agree to that. The issue is, if you choose to send the case back on remand, in what posture do you send it back? Do you send it back and tell the judge to sentence the defendant to the 96 months that he was going to sentence him to? Or do you send it back and allow the defendant another opportunity to raise an issue that he waived before, that being the overrepresentation?
But, you know, the waiver argument's tricky here, because if the judge had given the proper notice that everybody agrees should have happened, what I envision would have occurred at that point is the government would have presented its arguments about why a further downward departure was inappropriate, the arguments you've basically put in your brief here, and I can't believe Judge McDade would have said, you're out of order, you know, we're not going to let you respond. He would have responded to those arguments, wouldn't he? And there, you know, so if you sort of roll the clock back and try to think, what would this have looked like if everything had happened correctly, there would have been an adversarial exchange on that point, and the judge would have decided what he wanted to decide. Maybe you'd be hearing an appeal anyway as on the new de novo review, or maybe you wouldn't if you convinced him that this wasn't really one of those cases. And so that's my concern with relying on the objections that he had made earlier, back when he didn't have any clue, nor did you, that this was on the table.
Your Honor, though, he had a full opportunity to raise the issue.
Oh, he could have, but you're saying that this came, I guess, a bolt out of the blue to one and all, and I'm just worried that if we acknowledge the notice problem, but we don't, in a sense, try to restore the status quo ante to what it would have looked like had there been proper notice, we would be... Unless you think that this record supports only one result, such that, you know, in a sense, the notice is a harmless error, but it's pretty hard to be plain error and harmless error at the same time.
Well, Your Honor, under a de novo standard, under almost any standard the court would choose to apply, how could this be overrepresentation? You have a defendant who has a long, lengthy criminal history. And it's not, I think the application note to 4A1.3 makes reference to a couple misdemeanors some time ago. Here you have a continuous criminal history, you have very serious crimes, you have violent crimes, and you have recent crimes. So under any standard the court would choose to apply, it would be a futile exercise to send it back because they're under no facts. And there's no dispute in the facts. I mean, I don't think that Mr. Anderson is going to claim that he doesn't have these convictions or that the date's wrong or the nature's wrong. There's no dispute in the facts. And on these facts, there's no way that this can be an overrepresentation situation. It simply doesn't fit under the case law and under the comments to 4A1.3. They had a full chance, and I fully understand the court's position. They had a full chance, but we all got kind of taken by surprise with that last minute. But even with that...
Is this all or nothing, though? I mean, if there had been some adversarial exchange on it, you know, if the judge, instead of going all the way down to 60, had said, well, not 96, 85, you know, or some lesser adjustment, given the fact that at least some of these things were pretty minor, operating an uninsured motor vehicle, illegal transportation of alcohol don't strike me as overwhelming. Certainly beating up people with sticks and so on are on a different scale.
True. Well, even take that one point away. Take away that illegal transportation of alcohol. Take that away, you still have a Category 6. So if you look at what gives us the Category 6, we have the aggravated battery, which I think was an attempt murder, pled down to an ag bat, with great bodily harm. We have the domestic battery, pled down to a misdemeanor domestic battery. And then we have the 1998 aggravated battery with domestic battery. and then the 2001 obstructing justice. And I think the court would look at the facts that led to this charge. Now, the facts that led to this charge were an armed robbery. And that's what he was charged with in state court. And now we worked out a deal where that was dismissed temporarily so it wouldn't be consecutive time, so it could be later reinstated and be concurrent time. But this is a violent individual. And we would submit to the court that under these facts, there's no way it can be overrepresentation. And for that reason, we would ask you to send it back and ask that he ask the court to direct the court to sentence him to the 96 month that he originally did. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson.
May it please the court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellee, Warren Lindsay. As the government has stated, we do concede that Judge McDade erred by not giving the parties advance notice of the fact he was considering a downward departure, other than the substantial assistance, which, of course, we had notice of. Therefore, we'd argue that this court should simply remand Mr. Lindsay's case to the district court for resentencing.
But let me ask you this. Particularly since we now live in a world of de novo review of departures, what evidence could there be that you could introduce that would suggest this conviction record isn't what the application note or the guideline has in mind when it talks about a criminal history that's overrepresented?
Well, that's...
if there's no point to sending it back and we would just be sitting here looking at functionally this record again, we ought to decide the case.
Well, obviously there is no evidence that's not on the record that I'm aware of that could properly be considered. Actually, there's none I'm aware of at all, but I wasn't trial counsel.
Right, and that's my point. You know, the best you could get is a new hearing on whether, you know, the hearing that I was postulating would have happened if the notice had properly been given. And I'm just trying to imagine, you know, what's in there to bring forward. What would you have done with such an opportunity, other than make legal arguments, which we're quite capable of assessing ourselves?
That's true. If however the court had given notice, I'm not sure what other grounds might have been raised. Perhaps Mr. Joseph could have looked at this and said, well, you know, this might not quite fit under here, but since the judge seems to want to depart, maybe it can be pigeonholed under one of the 5K2 departures for some other acts. More importantly, since he did seem to want to go down further, he did have discretion to do that under the 5K1 departure, and while he probably wouldn't go down to a whole 60, all the way to 60 months, perhaps on remand he would decide to go down to even 90 months instead of 96 months under
so
that departure.
Maybe that's your strongest argument, that once the government makes the 5K motion, of course they recommended the 10% discount, and he went a little below what their number was, as I recall.
That's correct.
Maybe he would have used that authority somehow. I'm not sure all the way down to 60 either. But this theory, I mean, the fact is, we know on this record in a fairly clear way where this judge thought the 5K process was supposed to end, 96 months. He thinks about it. He talks about it. And then he moves on, after he's heard the allocution, to this other avenue.
That's true. And he was obviously trying to help Mr. Lindsay. Unfortunately, he didn't do it in the best way possible. The only thing I can think of from this record is probably he would have decided to go a little bit further on the 5K1 once he was aware that, at best, the departure on the criminal history standard was open to serious challenge. And perhaps would have been reversed outright, even if he had given notice. As I said, probably it wouldn't have gone all the way down to 60 months. Maybe he would have only gone another month, 95 months. We don't know. But he certainly would have been entitled to consider that once he was made aware of the proper legal standards and everything. However, if this court does disagree with that and thinks that Judge McDade made it plain that he would not go any further on that under any circumstances and agrees with the government on the criminal history departure, then suggest that it simply remand the case with order that the Judge McDade reimpose the 96-month sentence.
Of course, all we have are what Judge McDade's thoughts are that he articulated on the record. And, of course, he did this sentence in a total package, so to speak.
That is correct.
So in terms of him weighing different things and even making the findings that he did articulate on the record, he may well have done a different kind of scheme if he had known he didn't have that alternative in terms of overrepresentation.
That appears quite likely, since it appears that he wanted to go down further and thought this was the proper way to do it. Obviously, that's highly questionable at best.
The questionable part is the notion that you're going to make a finding of fact that somebody's substantial assistance is worth X number of months, and then you think you can go with overrepresentation of criminal history, obviously an historical fact, you know, what did you do in the past, and then you say, oops, can't do criminal history. Well, actually, your substantial assistance is worth, you know, a bigger discount. That's a little troublesome.
It would appear that way, and perhaps, like I said, if there'd been or noticed that Mr. and Judge McDade hadn't been speaking off the cuff, he would have decided it was worth a little bit more. As, of course, once the motion is made, district judges have a great deal of discretion as to how far down to go. And finally, just last night in reviewing the cases, I noticed that the government probably, because they're not used to being in that position and don't know any better, included the pre-sentence report in their separately bound appendix. Therefore, I'd ask that either be stricken or sealed. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Please.
Once again,
you actually have 4 minutes, so use up to that.
Thank you. A departure on another basis to this point now at HERDA would, of course, be inappropriate. And the judge did tell us exactly where he thought the 5K1 was worth, 96. And if he were to go further, it would be suspect. But also, he would have to do that under the framework of the factors set out in 5K1. He couldn't just do that. I mean, you have to, when you're making that downward departure motion for substantial assistance, you have to use the factors set out in 5K1. So it's just not a true free fall. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both counsels. We will take this case.